You're listening to The Dollop. This is a bi-weekly American history podcast. Hi, my name's Dave Anthony. Each week, I read a story from American history to my friend.
Oh, God. Gareth Reynolds, who has no idea what the topic is going to be about. You just collapsed yourself.
No, I was on a cloud in the sky, happy, and then
I've heard hobos shout less crazy shit.
Your response was so deadening.
Okay.
It was savage.
Okay.
Like an attack on
my art. All right, okay. All right, we're good. Okay?
I don't know if we are good.
Oh, gosh.
God, you want to hit a dude?
I'll do one bump.
People say this is funny?
Not Gary, Gareth.
Dave, okay.
Someone or something is tickling people.
Is it for fun?
And this is not going to become the tickling podcast.
Okay.
You are Queen Fakey of Made Up Town.
All hail Queen Shit of Liesville.
A bunch of religious virgins go to mingle.
And do what?
Pray.
Hi, Gary.
No.
Nicely done, my friend.
No. Gareth,
this is a podcast. I don't know. I don't have anything. It's Christmas is coming up. Maybe spend some time with your family, your lovers.
Spend some time in your lovers.
We're going to take a little break because it's the fucking holidays. And, you know, daddy don't work during the holidays, you know, because daddy's got a kid. And you know, that kid cries a lot.
The hell's going on?
So you know, I gotta be there for the boy, you know.
Okay, it's still happening.
Cause the goddamn tears.
Okay.
You know the way they fucking the eyes.
We're brought to you in part by Policy Genius. Look, if someone relies on you for financial support, whether it's a child or an aging parent or even a business partner, you need life insurance. Life insurance, it gives you peace of mind. So if something happens to you, your loved ones, they're going to have a financial cushion to pay for things like rent, mortgage, loans, education, just everything, daily expenses. And usually life insurance gets more expensive as you age. So start a policy soon rather than, you know, waiting on it. So look, head over to policygenius.com and answer a few questions about yourself. And in just a few minutes, you can work out how much life insurance coverage you need, and then you compare personalized quotes to find your best price. You could save 50% or more on life insurance by comparing quotes with Policy Genius. And they work for you. So Policy Genius works for you, not the insurance companies. So you can trust them to offer unbiased help and advocate for you at every step until you're covered. They don't add on extra fees. They don't sell your info to third parties. So head to policygenius.com to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com. We are brought to you in part by Zen Business. Look, a lot of people right now, the great resignation is on. They're like, they're out of their jobs. They're like, I don't want to do this anymore. I want more control over my life. I want a better life. I don't want a boss man telling me what to do. And so a lot of people are starting their own business. Zen Business is very, very helpful. They got an all-in-one platform. It guides you as a new entrepreneur through all the stuff you have to go through to get it going, an LLC or whatever you're going to set up. Got a super easy pricing structure. Starts as low as $49. And then look, they're not going to hit you with a bunch of hidden fees. It's all very straightforward. What they say is what it is. They have a very fast and simple business formation for LLC and other business structures. Worry-free compliance and annual filings. So you can stay in good standing with the state. You can secure an employee ID number so you can open a bank account, hire employees, protect your personal, all that stuff. I wish I had Zen Business when I started my business. It would have freed up all that time I spent on paperwork and all that stuff so I could have just focused on the business. So look, Zen Business has helped hundreds of thousands of people get their business off the ground by guiding them every step of the way and making it easier to launch a successful business. Get started today for as low as $49 at zenbusiness.com/dollop. That's zenbusiness.com/dollop.
My wife begged me not to do this episode.
Oh, good.
Because in it, we're about to bust out an accent we've never busted out before.
Okay.
Boston.
Okay. I've done a little Boston.
Not like this.
Oh, gosh.
Have we done Boston?
A little bit. I think from time to time there's been some sort of Boston moment.
I think we've done
moment.
A full Boston episode.
No, I don't think we haven't gone full Boston. So that'll be fun.
And there's actually no, like, the Boston accent is, it's like a squirrel. That makes no sense.
In a shout out to all our Boston listeners. Thank you for all your support.
No, but like sometimes they do a hard R, sometimes they don't do an R, sometimes they drop it, sometimes they don't. Like there's no actual rules to a lot of the Boston accent words. You kind of have to live there to nail it. That's sure. why in movies people never actually fucking nail it.
That's why
in Boston
it's just
like
so
he said idea.
Yeah, they just they go to a place for a week and they're like, yeah, you're good enough for now.
Yeah, you're okay. But you know, we're gonna try. That's what we do. We do stupid accents.
Okay.
And mine will be terrible.
Oh, good. That's something to look forward to.
Well, that's what I do. That's what I'm known for.
Okay.
You're known for nailing it.
Okay. I don't know. The way you're operating the iPad with the mic right now looks like Stephen Hawking.
I can't feel my back. Late 1950s.
Okay.
Boston, like many cities, was subjected to urban renewal at the hands of city leaders.
Okay. Urban renewal?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like gentrification. It's like, you know, getting rid of the... Yeah.
Sure.
In the case of Boston, renewal efforts wiped out entire neighborhoods. Between 1957 and 1959, Boston's West End was bulldozed. 38 blocks full of homes where 9,000 people lived were just gone. Developers bought the now cleared of poor people's
literally
homes.
Literally bulldozed?
Land. Yep.
Oh, wow.
Bought the now cleared poor people's homes land for cheap and built high-rise luxury apartments.
Okay, great. Everybody wins.
Everybody wins.
Hooray.
Discarded were the working class whites scattered.
I said everybody wins.
Fair enough. Luckily, the discarded working whites were scattered all over the Boston area and forced to pay higher rents, having to deal with the fact that the community generations had grown up in was now obliterated.
Okay.
So, right. So then they just... Those people just have to go to other places in Boston, and then everyone's rents go up. It's just a fucked up idea.
Right.
The same thing happened to Boston's East End neighborhood, bulldozed, lost to Logan Airport. They were building what was being called New Boston.
Okay.
And the poor didn't really have a part in it.
Okay.
And every poor neighborhood knew that they could be next. All the urban renewal money went to the middle and upper classes. Right, so the neighborhoods.
So the idea is essentially to just out wealth the poor people who then won't be able to live there. Sort of.
I don't know what the overall plan is. I just know
it's basically hook the rich up.
Yeah, hook the rich up. The developers are coming in. They want to do shit, and then you go, well, okay, well, we'll give you the East End. How's that?
Right.
So the poor found their neighborhoods growing worse and worse. For many reasons, housing shortages, gentrification, higher rents all came from bulldozing the West and East End. Crime rates went up. Mortgage money was harder to come by. Housing projects fell into disrepair and municipal services to poor neighborhoods all but vanished.
Good.
Their neighbors that they had neighborhoods they'd grown up in and that they cherished fell into decay. This was the new Boston for the poor living through it. Destruction of community.
It's
a good setup.
It's the new Boston.
It's the new Boston.
Sorry, everybody.
It's new Boston.
Sorry, everybody. Boston 2.0.
For you,
Coke 2.
For these guys over here, big high rises. For you, I'm going to shit on your face.
You guys will figure it out. You're smart.
New Boston.
Move.
Come on. As is common when people are cast aside, populism rose against New Boston. The political rhetoric reflected it. In 1963, city councilor Gabriel Piemonte ran for mayor. Quote, "We're tearing down homes without replacing housing for this same economic group. We have moved thousands of families with no thought, no interest in providing suitable housing replacements. Progress doesn't have the right to trample over human beings."
Good luck with that attitude.
What a fucking asshole.
Good luck with that attitude.
He lost.
Not surprising. Not surprising, because all we should do is vote against our best interests.
Right. Then came Louise Day Hicks, an old school Irish Catholic and chairperson of the Boston School Committee.
Okay.
Hicks' father was a very respected man in South Boston, also known as Southie.
Yeah.
And the most wealthy family man there.
Okay.
He was the guy who loaned out money to people, like not under the table, but like as a bank. He set up a community bank sort of
So it was still shady, though. They like still treated it like as shady as possible.
Yeah.
Don't tell anybody. Don't. Shh. Don't
sign
even look.
Right there on the line.
Don't even look.
Right?
Don't even look at me
don't
right
look,
now.
Don't look me in the eyes. All right? So it's going to be like a 4%. Yeah? Don't look at me. It's 4% loan.
Deal.
All right?
Yeah.
And if you don't fucking pay this, you know what happens? Do you know what? Look at me. You don't fucking pay this. You know what happens?
Huh.
It goes on your credit.
Is this a bank?
So Louise wrote the family name. A couple years before, the Boston chapter of the NAACP had demanded an immediate public acknowledgement of the de facto segregation in the Boston public school system.
Okay.
They just wanted a decent education for their black children and acknowledgement that their children were worse off. So that's all they want.
Fair.
They just want the school board to acknowledge.
It's a pretty big
that
ask.
The black
though.
Children
pretty big
are
ask,
worse
though.
Off.
Pretty big ask.
Four of the 13 black schools in Boston had health and safety problems so horrible they were supposed to have been closed.
Okay.
Per pupil spending for black students was on average $100 less than white students.
Right. That makes that adds up with what you're saying.
The district employed almost no African-American teachers or administrators, and many white teachers were hostile and racist towards black students.
In Boston?
Yeah.
Wow. Shocked. Boston, Massachusetts?
Yeah.
Oh. Always been so open-minded in my experience.
Yeah, I know. So, in response to
and if people get offended by that, there are so many, like, there are so many racist people.
We can have your, who I consider to be your spokesman, Bill Burr, come on, and he'll tell you. What's his joke? Boston's like San Francisco, except racist. Yeah. So, in response to the NAACP, all the white school committee held a hearing, right?
Okay.
So, they're all white. They hold a hearing to...
To figure out
to respond.
Let's listen to black people and what they want. So only invite white people.
Right.
We'll figure it out.
So they thought that having a hearing would release the steam and then they wouldn't have to do anything. Like that was the plan.
Right. Okay. Good.
But 800 people came out to support the AACP. Oh, so boy. Many that they had to turn almost all of them away because there wasn't enough room.
Right.
Then the committee decided to do nothing.
The white committee decided to do nothing.
Nothing.
Right.
And some of them wanted to do something, but Louise made sure that didn't happen.
Okay.
They said racism and segregation did not exist in the cradle of liberty.
Okay.
Because Bostonians are super into the whole revolution started here.
Right.
It's the fucking liberty. Yeah.
We could do anything.
What's that?
They don't have the Liberty Bell there.
No, but they're like, this is where the liberty happened.
They have the Freedom Trail.
We've been libertying here forever. You know how long we've been libertying?
Yeah. Been what?
Libertying.
Is that a?
Yeah, that's what we do here. We liberate all over the place.
Okay.
I libertied last night.
Mm.
Up and down, liberty, liberty, liberty. The problem was, the committee said, black parents.
The problem is that people are upset.
No, they're saying that the black parents are the reason that things are worse off in the black schools.
But that's saying the black kids, right?
Well, they're saying that the
black parents have raised bad black kids.
That
and
they're not, and they're not helping their kids with their education.
They're not helping their kids with the education they're not allowed to provide them with?
No, they're saying that the black kids' schools would be fine if the parents were better at helping the kids.
Helping the kids what?
Do you help them with their homework and stuff?
Oh, okay. So,
you know.
Okay. All right. Uh-huh. That just doesn't make much sense.
Yeah, I know. It's also not going to go well. You
right,
can tell
that
we're heading
terrible.
Down the path. It's not great.
Yeah, no.
The black parents then decided to use the courts to get equal treatment. They're like, oh, we're not great. I'm going to show you how not great I am with my fucking lawyer.
Okay.
There were two citywide boycotts by black students to make their point. So 2 days, no black students went to school.
Okay.
By 1967, racial desegregation was looming and Louise did not approve. And the people of South Boston had had enough change, right? So they've had all the shit with the fucking developments happening and people coming to the neighborhood.
They've been through enough.
They've been through enough.
They're people.
Louise made the argument that Boston schools being made, quote, the scapegoat were being made, quote, the scapegoat for those who have failed to solve the housing, economic, and social problems of the black citizen.
This is one of, got to be one of the first times, because that is what happens so much now, is that, like, you just, the people who are the aggressors paint themselves as the victims.
Yeah.
And then, like, the victim, they, like, take, you take the talking point away from the victims, or you at least neutralize it by, you know, saying you're also a victim.
Yeah.
Look, I understand these black people are upset, but the white people have been through enough trying to deal with the black people.
You get what I'm coming from, right?
The black people should understand this. You black people, you've been so unbelievably terrible to deal with that the white people, we're the, think of what, we shall overcome. We shall overcome.
Louise said, the Chinese schools in Chinatown were 100% Chinese. The North End schools were almost all Italian, and the South Boston schools were Irish Catholic. And, quote, we do not have segregation in the Boston schools.
I can't even imagine.
I think she doesn't know what the word means, because she just said that.
She just said we don't have segregation. Yeah. Right.
They're all segregated, right. But then we don't got the segregation.
Well, look, she's. She hasn't had time to focus on other things. Her people have been through enough.
Thank you.
Yeah.
She ran for mayor against current mayor John Collins and his urban renewal policies. It was a populist people's campaign. Louise, quote, what the people wanted was to be heard by a city hall, but they found that the mayor belonged to big business and special interests.
Okay.
Busing was the main topic, and she ran on the slogan. So this is her campaign slogan. You ready?
Uh-huh.
You know where I stand.
Oh, God. I'm ridiculous.
You know what I'm doing over here.
You know where I stand. By the way, that is not like...
Well, look, it's code for...
Yeah.
The,
blacks.
No blacks. Let's keep things the same.
You know where I stand.
Let's not have any change here. Yeah. We're going to do everything good. You know what I'm going to do? I was going to call my campaign Winky Wink, but I went with You Know Where I Stand.
I also just don't understand the idea that, like, how you feel like it's normal to just have no racial integration of any, like, how that is, how you see that as a benefit. Like, the... Well, I think it's true. What?
So you're okay. So take a place like South Boston. So you're living there. The only contact you have with, because they're not, these people aren't really going to work in the city, or if they are,
no, somewhere. Southeast is very much.
But they're not. So they're not really. They're not really having that. So the only time they're seeing black people is like a bus driver coming through, or when their schools play the other school and then they fight afterwards. Like,
but that's
so. So they're so isolated that they don't see the benefit. Why would I want to know anybody else?
Right. But that is the reason why the schools are always a good thing to start integration, because then kids are sort of like, oh, I didn't even know my best friend was Chinese. Like,
right.
Instead of the grown-ups who are hold on to that sort of racism just because,
like,
they haven't seen it before.
My kid goes to school, it's like a half Korean, I would say, and so to him growing up, it's just like, yeah, there's a bunch of Korean people, it's all, this is what it is. But you can tell there's a lot of Korean parents who are like, okay, just go, you're not part of my world. Like, there's quite a few that are absolutely fine, but there's definitely a segment of them, like, our kids are in an all Korean class, they're not going to hang out with you kids. We're not going to talk to you.
Right.
Like, yeah, it's very interesting.
So they go to Koreangarten?
They go to, there is a special Korean language program, and they don't teach their kids English growing up. So they will have to go into the Korean language program, which is all Korean.
It's an interesting time we live in. Be fun to see how this all shakes out.
Well, I can tell you what happens. All the white kids, boys, get Asian fetishes, and then they start dating them, and then the fathers want to kill them.
Wait, what?
Eventually, because the Korean kids aren't going to have any problem with it, but even though they're trying to keep their kids isolated at school, they can't. And then those kids are going to start dating, and they're going to start dating white kids, and then the whole fucking thing will come apart.
Yeah, well, that's what we need.
Right.
We just need to keep, Like, we just need to keep mixing it up. Hopefully, we'll all just turn out one color in like 200 years.
It's mixing up.
200 right. years. Like, there'll be Earth. Anyway, yeah, have fun, Earth. Dave.
Good luck. Okay, so back to this. So, so you know where I stand. It's code that she believed the things that they believed in, code against the tide of change. The business community and moderates were terrified by what she represented. They all came together and backed new and up-and-coming mayor candidate Kevin White. And, yeah.
So, wait. White's the non-racist?
So, okay. White's the guy we're against. Yeah.
White power. White power. No, 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 no. Do not chant that. No. Do not chant that here.
No, no, sir.
Come on. White is right. White is right. No, 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 do not. Gentlemen, no. gentlemen.
And the wealthy and better people, as they considered themselves, had no problem going after Louise. Boston author George Higgins described her, quote, stubby and overweight, middle-aged, with a fussy hairdo and at least a double chin.
See, this is the thing.
But this is where, yeah. This is the thing.
That you can't, if you're like, do not judge people based on their appearance, you short, double-chinned weirdo.
You can't be against blacks, you little stubby fat fuck.
You should not join. You should not just suddenly decide that someone does not belong to school based on their appearance. Otherwise, you'd be in troll college, you little bridge sprite. Let me guess, you want a handful of children's teeth or something so I can cross your moat.
Louise's campaign was such a big deal that she made it onto the cover of Newsweek magazine in an article that mocked her to the point of savagery. It was titled Backlash in Boston. She was portrayed as a crude, popular monster, and Newsweek took pleasure in ripping her apart. Quote, her Boston is the immigrant Boston of Irish cops and firemen, saloon keepers and cab drivers, longshoremen and small-time businessmen.
Can I, okay, can I take a little guess? Because this is very, like, when Time Magazine just named Trump Person of the Year.
Oh, what?
It was, you're like, okay, I get it. Your angle is to, like, the whole thing is that it's always been, like, who is the biggest deal of the year?
Yeah,
not
which
who's
is
the
true.
Best person of the
he
year.
He's the biggest deal of
but
the
year. But the problem is that it's titled Person of the Year. It's not titled Main Focus of the Year. So he's able to spin that into, I'm the best person of the year. Time said that. It's unbelievable. I'm the best.
Right, but Hitler was the person of the year in 43 or whatever. Like,
see, they just can't. It's maybe time to tweak the rules.
I get it.
But this is the same thing. It's when you put the spotlight on someone to be like, isn't this person stupid? And then you're like, oh God, we're stupid, and everyone now knows of this person.
Well, Newsweek said her supporters looked like characters out of Moon Mullins. Moon Mullins is a comic strip about lowbrow characters who lived in a boarding house and loved Vice.
Okay.
The writer called her followers, quote, a comic strip gallery of triplers and brawlers.
This is foolish.
And after Hicks gave a speech, they, quote, unscrewed their cigar butts from their chins and lined up to pump her arm as if it were a jack handle under a trailer truck.
I'm a little lost.
Newsweek was being the exact kind of snobby, superior, classist bullshit that
basket of deplorables.
That's right. That fueled Louise's candidacy. She attacked the magazine for its, quote, insults to Boston and its residents, declaring, quote, I am proud of my heritage.
And my chins.
Now, Senator Edward Kennedy also backed White for mayor. The powers of the day thought White could bridge the divide between business and the poor working white class neighborhoods. And White won by 12,000 votes. They're like 300,000 people. So it was a pretty close race. And he tried to bridge the gap. He stopped the rampant destruction of houses and gave locals a voice. He tried to put an end to racial tensions with his Summer Thing neighborhood program.
Summer Thing neighborhood program?
It's like a music art sort of thing, but then people from all neighborhoods come together for the festival. That's
it's a terrible
idea.
Name.
Yeah, it's not great.
I bet it's at the Hat Shell.
It's still happening, though.
Okay.
He spent over $500 million on neighborhood improvements, and it seemed to be working. Then came the recession of 1974.
Oh, boy.
And as the money stopped pouring in, came the desegregation decision of the courts. with no power to speak of, middle-class blacks in Boston had been focusing on the schools for a while and had turned to the state legislature and the courts. Their belief was simple. Pat Jones, a black community activist, said, quote, "If the rain drips into the school library and there are only blacks sitting in that library, then nothing is going to change. If white kids are sitting in the library, things are going to change and the roof is going to get fixed." Okay, that's absolutely true.
True.
100% true.
Next point.
In 1965, the legislature passed the Racial Imbalance Initiative, which said that schools with more than 50% minorities were imbalanced and would not get state funding.
So now just sort of starting to turn the clock back on what the progress they've...
No, they're saying right now any school that doesn't have 50% minorities...
Oh, so that doesn't.
Doesn't, yeah.
Sorry.
The Boston School Committee fought it in all kinds of ways, at one point reclassifying 670 Chinese students as white.
Whoa, wait. But...
Because the Chinese are better than the blacks, in their mind.
Yeah, but does
we'll
that...
We'll take the goddamn Chinese.
Okay, right, okay.
All right, so put Chinese over here, put Chinese over there.
The more I look at the black kids, they look very, color-wise, very... Asian kid.
Oh.
He looks a little...
Whitey, white guy.
You know, especially that kid that dyed his hair blonde. I mean, that kid is...
ridiculous.
He's almost Caucasian.
Yeah, he's like in a boy band.
He's an Asian white. They're Caucasian.
Tremendous.
We should call him.
Tremendous child.
And that's where Caucasian came from.
The state then denied Boston $52 million in school funding.
For what? We did everything.
We made the Chinese white. What do you want from us?
Damn.
God. We're not making the blacks white. I'll tell you that right now.
God.
That's not on the agenda.
I knew if that white guy got into office, we'd be screwed.
The school committees responded, and the school committee responded by pushing demonstrations and fighting in the courts. So their response is to have people hit the streets.
Right.
And then fight back with lawyers. Finally, the NAACP stepped in and charged the Boston School Committee with violating the 14th Amendment. Federal Judge Arthur Garrity agreed. He ordered that the school committee come up with a plan by September 1974, and the committee refused. Yeah, that's a weird...
Is that an option?
It's not actually an option.
Right.
Yeah. Judge Garrity then put the schools in federal receivership and imposed his own solution. So he's taken over the schools.
Okay.
Now the federal government's running the schools.
Okay.
Phase one of his plan focused on the two poorest schools in Boston, all white Irish South Boston High and nearly all black Roxbury High.
Okay.
Kids would be bused from six different public housing projects to the two schools.
Okay.
Right, so they're taking black kids and putting them in South Boston. They're taking white kids and putting them in Roxbury.
Surely this will be
smooth.
How could it not go well?
All that's going to happen is there's going to be a little bit of grumbling, blah, 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 blah. And then let's get to learning.
Normally, if a person who's prejudiced meets the person they're prejudiced against, they learn right away that it's
right away.
Wrong.
Especially when you force them into a room together.
Right. Yeah. This will go fine.
Southie had the highest levels of concentrated white poverty in the United States and an adult male unemployment rate of 40%.
Pretty high.
Well, the good thing about that is there's a lot of dudes hanging around doing nothing.
That's good.
That's
angry
always,
dudes.
Always important.
Looking for work, poor dudes.
Southie led the city in drug overdoses and came in a close second to Roxbury in gun murders.
Hey, all right. Something to talk about.
South Boston and Roxbury High had parallel dropout rates.
So this is essentially like a foreign exchange program, but with races.
Well, what should happen is that, look how much we have in common. You shoot guys, I shoot guys.
Yeah.
The white parents in Southie were enraged.
Over what?
Because the judge lived in better off Wellesley and there was no busing going on there.
That's amazing.
Louise had several demonstrations. Anti-bussers formed an organization called ROAR.
ROAR.
Restore Our Alienated Rights.
Okay.
A right to have white people only here.
Only in Boston would they start and end their acronym with the one letter they have trouble pronouncing. ROAR. Sorry, how do you spell it? ROAR. R-A-W? ROAR.
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 Are you saying raw?
ROAR.
ROAR.
Like the lion, ROAR.
Like meat?
Like the king of the raw.
Are you saying like more?
Raw.
Okay.
You know the line goes out there, raw.
I don't. I feel weird.
Dude, you're a fucking idiot.
Fuck you.
Fuck you.
You're fucking wicked stupid. Jesus Christ. To get in, members had to pledge.
Okay.
Are you ready for the pledge?
Nope.
I will not pledge allegiance to the court order of the United States or the dictatorship for which it stands, one law, one nation, under guarantee with liberty and justice for none.
This is Roar.
Yeah,
that's Roar's pledge is their pledge that they will not identify America until it recognizes whites as number one.
Or a dictatorship.
Right.
In Boston, political leaders empowered the working class by rewarding them politically for loyalty. The city's working class believed in pragmatic politics and making deals. That's how it was done. So the people of South Boston figured if they protested, they would force another solution through a deal.
Okay.
Because that's the way things are done. That's
the power of protest. Right.
They almost looked, it almost looked to them like fixing a traffic ticket, right? You know, right. You get fucking the guy over there to come over, you do a thing, you talk about some stuff, and then they're like, no blacks.
Right.
The anger from the outside manipulation of their lives was bubbling over. The economy was in the shitter. Shipyards were closing. Defense-related industries were paring down after the Vietnam War. South had the highest average number of families on welfare in the city. They were at the end of their rope, and then along came something they could physically fight against. Now, South Boston's a peninsula into the harbor. The Charles River separates Charlestown from downtown, and so these are totally isolated communities, proud, hostile to outsiders, and too poor to send their kids to private schools. The high schools with their...
Like, Southie's kind of scary if you're white.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a little bit different now, I think. But yeah, I think there are, back then it's scary if you're... Yeah,
totally. It's
a fucking old school neighborhood. Like, if you come through there, like, who the fuck's this guy?
But they, like, even when I went to school there, one of my best friends still lives in Revere. Which is this, you know, there are just these, like, and it's very, like, reminds me very much of, like, England in the sense that, you know, if you went out drunk, there's a good chance you'll fight somebody.
Yeah.
Like, and that was the same in like, Revere and Southie's the same, where you're you don't want to, you know, you just don't want to fuck around.
Right.
Yeah. Keep to yourself a little bit.
No, you know how to fight growing up in Southie.
Yeah.
Like, there's no other.
Yeah.
So their isolated communities are proud. They're too poor to send their kids to other schools. The high schools and their sport teams were like one of the focal points of the community. So they're very tribal. They sang, Southie is my hometown. You know, they're like that kind of shit.
The White Knights.
So bringing in black kids and sending their own kids out of the village to go to school was a major threat to their way. Judge Garrity was another elitist attacking their way of life. And The South Boston State Senator William Bulger said Garrity, quote, the sensitivity of a chainsaw and the foresight of a mackerel. And that's just fucking a classic Boston.
It's a reach.
He's fucking loud and he's fish-like.
It's a reach.
It's, you know.
He's loud and fish-like.
Well, I'm sure when he said that, everyone nodded their head. And that's right. Mackerels don't fucking see shit down the line.
And he's loud and blind.
In an interview, one Southie resident warned what was coming. We may be guilty, but we will fight you. We might go out in the back here and fight, and I might tear your eyes out. It's wrong, maybe, but we'll stand by our actions.
Okay.
That's a very Southie sort of.
It's a weird mantra.
Saying, yeah, but he's saying we'll fucking...
We'll kill you.
I'm going to do some fucking damage.
We will kill you.
It might be wrong, but I'm going to be okay with it.
Our motto is we might kill you.
Several days before busing went into effect, well-known Southie crime boss Whitey Bulger set an elementary school on fire in Judge Wesley's neighborhood.
Okay.
Right? So
that's how he Judge gets back. Garrity's, he's like, see? Now you don't have a school neither.
Well, basically, those kids had to go to be bused somewhere else while they were fixing the school.
So when you're busing these kids, is it almost just like you're just randomly picking like however many kids and they're just getting bused this other school?
So they go through the school roster and they pick a certain, this amount of girls, this amount of boys, this color, that color, and then they send them to another school.
It's pretty weird. That's pretty weird in general.
It's pretty weird.
It's a strange force. It doesn't seem like it's going to go well.
Well, I'm going to agree with you on this one.
Yeah.
3 days before schools were to open, a group of moderates organized a meeting at City Hall Plaza. It was an attempt to maybe take the air out of everyone talking about violence.
Okay.
Right? Let people fucking blow off some steam, and then maybe it'll all work itself out.
Sure.
Senator Edward Kennedy was invited to address the crowd at one point, so no one knows he's there, and some guy's like, hey, you want to fucking stand up and say some words?
Okay.
People were surprised to see him, and everyone knew he supported busing. 8,000 people jeered and booed him. They sang songs, and people yelled out, quote, you're a disgrace to the Irish. Why don't you let them shoot you like they shot your brothers?
Now, that is going far too far.
Why don't you put your one-legged son on the bus to Roxbury?
All right, my boy, that is unbelievable.
His son had lost his leg a year before to cancer.
Yeah. You know, yeah. Well, look.
That's...
Go to a Boston sporting event. Like, it's not, nothing's off limits. I remember the Jason Kidd when he was there and they were shouting wife beater. Like, literally every time he touched the ball.
Yeah, they're amazing. His son had just lost his leg to cancer. These were the people who had supported Kennedy for years, and now most of them turned their backs on him and started singing songs, while others threw tomatoes and eggs at him. Kennedy was hustled off the platform. A newspaper reported, quote, he was rushed by by angry mothers who stepped in front of him with clenched fists.
You will not be throwing any more tomatoes at Ted Kennedy!
You're not taking Tommy away from me! One woman kicked him in the shins while others started hitting him.
Wait, these are women against Kennedy?
Yeah.
You know that this is like a fetish for him. Will you kick me in my balls harder, ma'am? It's one of the only ways I can be sexual anymore.
Oh, God, bussing. There we go.
There you go. Knee me in my stomach and then let me sniff your foot.
He was hustled out and the doors were closed behind him, but the doors were glass and the people immediately shattered them. Then they went outside and threw eggs at the federal building next door.
Did they all just go shopping?
Kennedy, they fucking brought eggs in case someone like Kennedy came. Wow, they were fucking prepared.
Worst case scenario, we make the world's biggest omelet.
This obviously did not bode well for the first day of school.
Right. Oh, right. How's that going to go?
The next day, September 12th, 80 schools opened in Boston. Only one had problems, South Boston High.
Okay.
It was a hot September morning. The old building sits on top of a hill. But that day, it looked different. As, quote, everyone should own a nigger and no niggers in South Boston and kill niggers was spray painted on the walls.
It's not a good start.
Outside, a crowd of several hundred people had gathered across the street. They held signs that included Bussin' Back to Africa and French Fried Niggers for Sale.
The Bussin' Back to Africa just shows a total lack of geographical grasp. it's not an aquatic vehicle.
Reporters had gathered and a police official told them, quote, make sure you leave a little passageway for the kids who might have the balls to show today.
Jeez, the cops.
Well, where are the cops from?
Yeah, oh yeah, I'm not surprised.
When the first buses appeared, the crowd went into a, quote, frenzy.
You're being treated like a scab for your race.
Right.
Interesting.
Several hundred people chanted, here we go, Southie. Okay. That's terrifying. Because of the people it's coming from, it's terrifying.
Yeah. Because, again, you know what that means.
Yeah.
You know where we stand.
Well, it's also a fucking, we're going to go get him. Here we go, Southie.
No, it's a sporting event.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they started throwing rocks, followed by chunks of wood, beer cans, and beer bottles. They also threw bananas and pieces of watermelon at the bus. Now, these are kids.
It's just like...
The cops made a line, clubs out, and moved toward the crowd to try to disperse them. Which worked, but the crowd would just immediately reform elsewhere and start throwing things again. A Swedish reporter was there, and she said, quote, it's just
they're
like-
trying to make the kids eat fruit salad.
Happy bananas.
Yeah.
It's just like Belfast. The women look the same, talk the same, and seem to be just as tough. Anytime there's trouble, you see them egging the kids on.
So, that is in relation-
A Swedish reporter- is saying that what she's seeing in Southie is exactly like what she's seeing in war-torn Belfast. The street battle went on all day. By the end of the day, the cops had riot helmets on when they fought to get the kids back on the bus. One bus had a window.
How was school, hon? Well, you're covered in banana. What happened?
It's weird. I got...
You excited for tomorrow?
I want to die.
You excited to go back tomorrow? Die. Try this forced experiment again?
Yes.
Because you lost the lottery?
This is great for kids.
Send you back into the devil's den?
One bus had a window shattered by a rock. Glass-cut children, the driver, and a monitor. Attendance on day one of the 1974 school year at South Boston High. Out of 1,300 students.
Mm-hmm.
124.
That's how many showed up the first day?
56 blacks and 68 whites.
I gotta say, if you're a black kid,
that's not
love
terrible.
The numbers.
Yeah, that's not terrible.
Way better
all.
For that's
yeah. Yeah.
Granted, the rationale is awful.
Well, getting there is not great.
But at least then you're like, look, worst case scenario, it's almost like 1-to-1.
Yeah, it's 1-to-1 in here.
Worst case. And they're white.
The mayor and his aides were said to be in shock by the response of the neighborhood.
Well, he was dying of AIDS.
No one knew the sense of rage that had been building in Southie. Student Regina Williams had never been there. Quote, I had no idea what to expect of this busing thing. I didn't know anything about South Boston. I didn't know anything about, you know, that they didn't like us. I didn't know anything that was in store for us. But when we got there, it was like a war zone.
That's even more terrifying.
Yeah. I'm sure most of them had no fucking idea what they're getting. They're just like getting on a bus. They don't know what it is. I came back and I told my mom, and I'll never forget. I said, Ma, I'm not going back to that school unless I have a gun. At 14 years old, I'm not going back to that school. And she didn't. She dropped out of school the next day.
Wow.
On the second day of school, there was a mob of 500 outside. Now the mob was adjusting to police tactics and advancing and retreating while throwing missiles.
Throwing missiles?
Well, missiles are what they call rocks or whatever.
Oh, okay. Well, they should be more clear.
On day three, the police brought
We're throwing grenades! Apples. Throwing apples.
Not apples, sorry. My bad.
Landmines! Frisbees.
On day three, the police brought out the TPF, the Tactical Police Force.
Okay.
That was a special unit that had been formed to deal with anti-war press protesters during Vietnam.
Okay, so that's good that it's paralleling that.
Mm-hmm. So on and on this went. The crowd would attack, disband, and then run through the streets and reform. A brick hit Detective Francis Creamer, who fell to the pavement, hitting his head, and he went into cardiac arrest, and he died 3 weeks later. 100 kids rushed the Andrew Square subway station and just beat random blacks. So it's spreading out a little bit.
Good. Normal. Behavior. Yeah.
The TPF rushed into the subway station swinging nightsticks at the kids. The kids ran off.
Very tactical. Very tactical, precise maneuvering. Take out your clubs and hit them!
Hit the fuckers! A brick hit a cab driver as he drove past a housing project. By day three, South Boston women were wearing football and hockey helmets in the street. Come on.
That's crazy.
One woman told a reporter, quote, in America, the voices of the people are supposed to be heard. The black people are being heard, but we're not. We want our kids to go to our schools. They say the schools belong to everybody. We're part of everybody.
That is so, like, that, it's so hard when you hear, like, a point like that and it's confident. Because you're like, oh my God. I have to, like, argue against logic, you're not buying into logic.
Well, here's the hard thing. So they're right about getting backed into a corner, but they've picked the wrong battle of all the battles.
But you can't, like...
So they've been fucked over by the city, and then now there's one... This is the problem with when you're fighting against wealth, is that... At the end of the day, the only thing you can punch is another poor person.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, the like, what's so vexing about the world we live in is that we have, like, we're literally talking about, like, you know, 2,000 people who are ruining the fucking world. Like, we know the area where they are. Let's just go there and just fucking kick the fence down and go ape shit on him. And then be like, yeah, this is Ted. He's going to be the president for a week while we figure stuff out.
Hey, Ted.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, man. Hey, you guys. I was just down at the bar.
He's great. I think we're all going to love him. Like I said, every congressman and senator died in the explosion, so it's a page one rewrite.
Another woman said, quote, we just want our children close to home. You'd think this was Russia. Now that I will give, now that I will say, as a parent, if someone came to me and said, your kid has to go to school far away,
totally.
It's a bummer. It's
if
a
your
bummer.
Kid is one of the kids who is going into like a completely different racial environment,
it's terrifying.
That is like the flaw. That's why it's like, you know, it's like an arranged marriage. It's like you can't force this sort of acceptance. The idea behind it, like the thrust behind it is good because you're like, well, let's show people how not different we actually
right,
are.
But the problem is that they made their bed because they own the school district and they controlled it and they didn't do anything. So now they're getting the repercussions of that and they're fucking mad at it.
Yeah. No, I think you do, like you can empathize with, but again, it's like when you're like, when someone is saying, you know, this is about equal rights. Well, where are my rights? It's like, no, you're not. These are, no.
In South Boston, a couple nights later, the TPF just flat out brawled with a mob of about 500.
Tactically.
Who were trying to break into the school.
Well, stab them with swords.
We tactically hit them over the head with these sticks that we got here.
We're shooting them in a spread fashion. Tactically.
The Saudi violence emboldened the other neighborhoods because that's how violence works. On the fifth day, black students in Mattapan,
I can't believe they made it to a fifth day.
Oh, dude. Threw rocks at the integrated Boston Technical High School soccer team during practice. So black students are now throwing rocks at white students. And fights were happening in schools. Students fighting at Hyde Park High. It was so bad in the first week that police called the TPF. So they called the cops into the school because they couldn't handle the fighting.
We think we should just start hitting them with wood.
We're
the tactical squad.
Yeah, get the guys in here then.
Yeah.
Four students were hospitalized. The headmaster closed the school for 2 days. Shots were fired through the door of Jamaica Plain High School. Buses were stoned in Roxbury, Mattapan, and Dorchester. In Dorchester, a group of black guys slashed two white students with knives. Two white guys assaulted a black MBTA driver. So it's just a bus driver that they just attacked. So it's spreading citywide now. And that's how it went for a couple of weeks. Stoning, stabbings, fightings. And then on October 4th, the anti-busing forces held another rally with politicians speaking. And the neighborhood politicians did what they could do to calm the tensions.
I'm sure. Words will probably be the answer to this.
State Senator William Bulger.
Okay.
Quote, this is no time for the faint of heart. The enemy can go straight to hell.
Wait, who's he pro?
he's an anti-busing guy.
So who's the enemy? The enemy are the busing people?
Yeah, the people who bring in the buses in.
It feels like when they say enemy, they're talking about, okay.
Someone asked him if there was a chance of success, and he said, quote, you bet your life. There isn't. There's no chance of success. That you're going against the courts. You have no chance of success.
Right.
So the politicians are lying. The politicians have been saying for years, we're going to stop the busing. And now the busing's happening. So they're trying to keep their fucking jobs and their power by saying, we're going to fucking get the busing out.
Right.
They can't say, that's it for that.
Yeah.
Louise told the crowd they were fighting for freedom. Freedom!
Always.
The police were mostly Irish, and their union had donated money to the anti-busing cause.
Good.
But when they were called upon, they held their ground. It didn't take long for them to get tired of the townie bullshit. Quote, after the third or fourth rock comes flying, you tend to forget the righteousness of the cause. Soon the police were laying into the crowds with everything they had. The actions of the cops, particularly the TPF, made the people angrier. Everything is snowballing.
Ugh.
There was a well-known bar in Southie called the Rabbit Inn, a local hangout for an Irish gang known as the Mullins, and right across the street from a housing project. There were rumors that the Mullins were going to commit major acts of violence with guns and dynamite. And the police knew the Rabbit Inn was a place where anonymous calls kept being made that would lure police into areas where objects would be thrown at them.
Okay.
So on Friday the 4th, when a police cruiser had its windshield smashed by a brick near the Rabbit Inn, the cops tried to arrest the guy. But 35 Mullen gang members came out of the bar and fought with the police until they let the guy go.
Wow.
The next night, the TPF, with black tape over their badge numbers and dressed in riot gear, raided the bar.
Wow.
The cops tore the place apart and, quote, busted heads.
Okay. Did you get his badge number?
I could. There was a, he's a black stripe guy.
What a badge number. I don't even know if we can find this
guy. He's a black stripe guy? It was fucking Frankie. He lives down by my ma. It's Frank. I know it's fucking Jesus Christ. We went to a fucking school together. Why don't you not do that?
That worked out well.
It's weird that the heater doesn't work as a...
an ottoman?
Ottoman.
It's strange.
Two nights later, a crowd loitered around the projects across the street, protesting the raid. That's when, completely oblivious to everything, Jean-Louis André Yvon drove past. He was a Haitian refugee.
Oh, God.
The crowd stopped and surrounded the car, smashed the windows, dragged him out, and beat him with hockey sticks.
Oh, Jesus.
News cameras recorded it. Two cops tried to rush in to save him, but they were also beaten back. One of the cops pulled out his gun and fired over the crowd's head, and they finally ran off, and Yvon was saved. The next day, after watching it on the news, blacks retaliated.
Yeah.
English High was a new, mostly black school near Fenway Park. White students were being bussed in. Someone pulled a fire alarm, and the students emptied out into the streets and started a race war.
All right, first one to that tree wins.
No, that's not the war we're doing.
Oh.
You're like, you know how you're white?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm punching you now in the face.
Oh.
It's not the same
thing. Want to race to the tree?
I'm going to punch you in the stomach.
Ow. Man.
The blacks from nearby housing projects started throwing rocks at passing cars that whites were driving. Whites were dragged from their cars and beaten. Rioters threw objects from the tops of buildings at police cars. One guy reported they were throwing baseball bats. About 1,500 students walked up Tremont Street, smashing windows and throwing rocks. The fighting went on in the area for another day.
Okay. Tremont.
On October 10th, genius President Gerald Ford stuck in his nose in and said, quote, I respectfully disagree with the judge's order.
Wait, he disagrees with the order?
Bussing.
Wow.
He just said in the middle of rioting,
wow,
that he agrees with the white people who are fucking attacking buses and
it's almost like
a city is
literally, how does he not know not to say that?
A city is literally coming apart and the best thing you can do is like, we got to work this out. Let's figure out how to do it. You don't take a fucking side.
Yeah. And not and the wrong side.
Right. Well, it fired up the anti-bussers and gave them hope that the busing would stop.
Yeah.
They're like, look, the president's on our fucking side. Let's go get him.
God.
Mayor White said the president was challenging the rule of law in the country because that's what he was doing.
Right.
After 4 weeks, there are 149 arrests and 129 injuries, property damage of $50,000, and one cop who died of a heart attack. The mayor then asked Judge Garrity for federal marshals to be sent in. He said hysteria was leading to more hysteria. And like everything else, when the anti-busing people heard about his requests, they got even angrier.
Oh, God. I thought they were at like the height of anger already.
Oh, my God. No.
Oh, God.
State Rep Ray Flynn responded, quote, force will beget force. The people of South Boston have a proud tradition. They don't like to be pushed around by police or federal marshals either.
Okay, sure. The tradition is that they don't like to listen to law. The tradition also seems to be that they don't want black people around them.
That does seem to be an issue.
We've just been racist for so long, and we're celebrating our anniversary right now. It's just... the timing of all this is way off.
It's fucked up because I've been hating blacks for like 30 years and I'm supposed to stop now?
Yeah, it's not a good time for me to not be racist anymore.
After all that, the judge rejected the mayor's request for federal marshals. So the mayor asked the governor, who gave 300 state troopers and 100 cops for the Metro District.
Okay. Right?
On October 10th, state troopers were patrolling the halls of South Boston High School. That was when the riots moved into the high schools. There was an endless stream of brawls between whites and blacks in South Boston and Hyde Park high schools. On October 15th, there were two separate fights at Hyde Park. One started with some black girls attacking a white girl in a bathroom. A white student, Joseph Crowley, rushed in to help and he was stabbed in the stomach. The entire school was now in a race brawl, and the entire 125 TPF squad entered the school to stop it.
Let's all run in different directions and scream. Go!
And we'll stop fucking hitting guys in the face with our stick things.
Tactically.
Outside the school, the police arrested Joseph Crowley's sister for throwing rocks at a bus.
Okay.
I love that her brother stabbed, and she's like, fuck you, you fuckers.
You're under arrest for being upset about your brother.
The school was closed by the headmaster for 2 days.
On what grounds?
I don't know. They just
snow?
They didn't want kids to
snow
learn.
Snow day?
Yeah. We're taking a racist day. Hey, so no school for 2 days because of racism.
Okay.
The governor then mobilized 400 National Guardsmen. He asked the federal troops for President Ford, who said no. The 400 National Guardsmen seemed to stop the fighting in the schools, and by the end of October, the FBI had 42 open files of civil rights violations. But something else was happening. Black parents were reporting their kids were bringing home textbooks for the first time. Previously, they had not because there weren't enough for each student, and now there was enough textbooks to go around. More equipment, too. At Roxbury High, quote, they've got equipment there coming out of their cars. I know the science teacher there, and he's tried for years to get a microscope, just one lousy microscope. Suddenly, he's got 125. Yeah, as soon as they started sending white kids over to the black schools, they started funding the black schools.
Right.
It's so fucking gross. The state troopers left on December 4th, as that was the length of time that was agreed they'd be there. Starting that day until December 10th, South Boston High was one of continuous brawls inside while cops fought protesters outside. On the 6th, they closed the school early when white students marched through the halls chanting racist chants.
Cool.
On the 9th, a black girl hit a white girl on the head with a padlock. Black students said they left for home on buses. When they get on the buses at the end of the day, Southie mothers waved bananas and jumped up and down like they were monkeys.
Mm.
Those are fucking adult. Those are like 35-year-old.
Yeah. Not shocking.
On December 11th, as
anybody who had a fruit stand was like, hey, business is booming around here.
I can't believe how many
I'll tell you what. This new busing program has done wonders for my fruit cart.
I sold like 80 watermelons this week.
Those are $2 a pound.
On December 11th, as students switched classes, which was when the brawls usually start because they're all in the fucking hallway.
Right.
James White, a black student, stabbed Michael Faith, a white student. As Faith crumpled to the ground in a puddle of blood, panic ensued. White students fled the school. As they did, the picketers heard what happened and a huge mob swelled outside.
This is not going to end well.
The crowd thought Faith was dead and they wanted vengeance.
Okay.
Why do you think this isn't going to end well? I'm sure someone's going to talk
to you. This is such a tipping point moment. This is the butane on the fire.
This is when everything comes together and they hold hands and they sing a song.
Everyone stop.
We're gonna get.
We've been highly illogical for too long.
We're gonna get a circle. We need to hold hands, and Frankie's gonna lead us in a song. All right? Oh no, Patrick. Patrick gonna lead us in a song. Something about love and loving all colors and whatnot. I'm not gonna fucking do that. So they think the kid's dead, right? All the white kids ran out of the school. The picketers heard what happened, and they're outside. Soon there were 2,500 people screaming outside the building and throwing everything they could find. Inside, they became concerned they would not be able to get the black students out of the building. Louise, Bulger, and Flynn, the politicians, all arrived on the scene. And somehow, Louise was the voice of reason.
Okay.
Using a bullhorn, she addressed the protesters and said they had a right to be there, but they should let the black students leave.
OK. Okay.
Quote, "Let the black kids be bussed back to Roxbury." That's when the crowd turned on Louise and started chanting, "Shut up, Louise. Shut up, Louise."
Could have been so much worse.
They also started singing, "I'm Dreaming of a White Christmas."
Oh, God.
But here's the thing. I mean, it's kind of clever.
The truth is, it is clever.
I mean, at this moment, they start singing, "I'm Dreaming of a White Christmas." I mean, that's not... It's so fucking South Boston.
The argument isn't that they can be funny. they do have timing. But you, like, yeah. You got to be like, all right, good.
Okay.
A little funny moment right. in this racial nightmare. Now back to work.
A reporter described the scene. Quote, "Cans and sticks and bricks were flying through the air like a hailstorm, and some of the cops have been hit hard. Police waded in with clubs swinging away while mounted police rode into the crowd, trampling people. Kids slashed the tires of police cars and broke their windows. They overturned the police superintendent's car. Inside the building, a teacher saw a brick hit a cop in the head, and she started wondering if any of them were going to get out alive. At that point, they came up with a plan to bring decoy buses out front while they would hustle the black students out a side door for other waiting buses."
Okay.
Quote, "The horsemen had to bear the brunt of it. They waded into a hailstorm of cans, broken bottles, rocks the size of fists, brick boards, and eggs, but neither the battered men or the bloodied horses broke. So the cops weighed in as a distraction, get themselves in the middle of the fucking crowd."
Right.
"So they can get the kids out the side door."
Right.
"It worked. The students got out after being trapped for 4 hours. But it had finally gone too far. South Boston High was closed for the rest of the semester. The black community called for the school to be closed permanently. Black leader Thomas Atkins called Boston High a jungle." But that's actually too nice.
Yeah.
Jungles are... There's nice things there.
It's fairly dangerous, though.
I don't feel like it's as bad.
The jungle?
Yeah.
The jungle, you would not want to be in the jungle.
I feel like you're being a little bit mean to the jungle.
The jungle?
Yeah, I feel like...
You do not want to go to any jungle.
No, I'm sorry, but the high school is way... I'd rather be in the jungle than in the high school.
I don't think you're right. I think 12 hours into your jungle journey, you'd go, you know what? I'll give it a whirl back at the old school.
I don't know.
As you're like step on, as like you've been bitten by five things and ate berries that are making you throw up.
Well, I don't like bugs. Is that a problem?
It's a huge problem for your plan.
"Since the beginning of the school year, 1,092 black students had been arrested, had been suspended or expelled, compared to 550 white students."
Oh, well, that tells you it. The black kids were twice as bad. Case closed. Case shut and good.
"The local alternative newspaper noted that the people of South Boston were completely alienated from the government and their rage was all-consuming. But at the same time, Southie was a community coming together. Before the busing crisis, people expected Southie to break apart slowly, being overrun by progress," right?
Right.
"Known as development. But this perceived attack reversed that trend and created a rise in ethnic pride. Residents started chanting green power as they stood at rallies or marched in parades. They wore shamrocks."
Green power.
Yeah, they're Irish.
Okay.
They had green tam o'shanters, Irish knit sweaters, signs and bumper stickers that proclaimed God had made Irish number one. Young Irish kids were encouraged to study the origins of their race in Ireland.
Ugh.
"They came together to revive the spirit of
not a
old
super rich history. Like,
South Boston.
Then we got a bunch of potatoes and killed each other, and then we came here. So embrace that pride." Yeah, that's right. "We're big fans of green-leafed things, little things that give you wishes, and potatoes and war."
Yeah, but you forgot to buy the rainbows.
Ah, that's right. "Although I like my rainbows only white."
"What about take pride in the people who have killed each other over a man in the sky? Forever.
That is the other thing. And I know this is from a while ago, but it still happens. You have to stop thinking that God, support him, believe in him, however you want to slice it. We have to stop thinking that he's picking sides in it. It's just, this is not the man that, deity or the being that...
That's never going away. No, it's never going away.
It's
never going to stop.
That's why, in America, politicians at times definitely insinuate, like, look, God likes us best, first and foremost.
First of all, clearly God likes us because we got all this shit that's got nothing to do with geography.
And we say, may God continue to bless the United Kingdom. He hasn't stopped blessing
us. He's been so great to us if you're white.
Yeah.
By the way, there was a Reddit thing where someone said that, what's your favorite podcast? And someone posted this and a bunch of people floated it up and there was a whole discussion on it.
Mm-hmm.
Down at the very bottom, some guy said, I like it, man, but when they get into their fucking white guilt shit, you know what? If you don't have white guilt listening to this podcast, you're inhuman.
But I also think that, I get the idea that somebody would be like, dude, stop making me feel so bad about something that I had nothing to do with. I understand that. However, the bigger point in all of it is just what choice do we have? How else are we going to react to this?
You have to.
Are we going to react to this like, oh, man.
This is fucking great.
Hey,
this is no big deal.
I agree. No busing. Gerald Ford had it. You know, the only way you can react is to be like, what a nightmare, what monsters.
You're not human.
And it's part of the way that you, not to say that we're going to end racism, but you have to listen to it and accept it.
It is how you end it. You understand the history of it.
Yeah. And you can't, like.
These people in this story we're doing right now wouldn't react the same if they had true empathy and understanding for the kids that were coming over.
We're saying the same thing. Everybody should take mushrooms.
That's what we're talking about.
Thank you.
Ayahuasca?
Listen, you know me. Huh?
Ayahuasca, right? That's what it's called?
That is not what mushrooms are called.
No, I know. No. Jesus Christ.
Listen, your question was...
Also...
And yes, ayahuasca is a great way to learn about everything. Sure.
Also, people were finding their calling. A woman explained how fighting back changed her. Quote,
I'm a professional racist, finally.
I got a hold of the anger. Wow, I never knew this old lady even had this kind of anger. What a great feeling to be able to take it out on all those ridiculous decisions and fight them. We've got a lot of people joining us who've lived with this anger all their lives.
This is the white anger.
Yeah. They all knew they had it in us. They just didn't know what to do with it. It's the only good thing about the busing movement. It allows me to find that anger, and brother, am I angry every minute of the day. So that's a sign that this is settling.
Working.
Well, it's a sign that it's settling in and becoming an accepted way of life when people say stuff like that.
Yes, right. You are now,
you're now moving beyond outrage into...
full-time job.
Right.
Yeah.
But the anger just led to violence and children not going to school. Attendance rates, while they had gone up since the beginning of the busing, were still way down. Activists in the black community saw things differently. Quote, if the whites want to keep their kids home, that's okay. Let them. Let them keep them home for 25 years so they can't get jobs. I guess that will mean more jobs for us.
So true.
Meanwhile, Lieutenant Robert Bradley...
My plan is to stay at home and get stupider. More stupid. Both.
Meanwhile, Lieutenant Robert Bradley of the TPF stood with his helmet on in a pile of broken glass with a dead cigar stub hanging out of his mouth as tow trucks took away a wrecked police cruiser. He said, quote, there's no end to it. It's just going to go on and on.
You're on mic.
There seemed to be no answer to the problem of Boston. So, this is... so long. This is going to be two parts.
Are we at our break?
Yeah, this is going to be two parts because it's...
Have we hit our midpoint?
Because, 1975 is fucking insane.
So and we should take a break before
we just did 1974, 1975.
So can we take? Let's end this before we get into 75.
Yeah, yeah, it's way too long to do. It is one episode.
So let's do a full break.
To be continued.
Okay. Wow. Dun dun dun.